The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Welcome to the Schmo Zone, where the air is thin, the sports get heavy, with your hosts, the dynamic duo, Dave Schmollinson and Helen Yee.
What's up, party people? Welcome back to the Schmo Zone. It's 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm Dave Schmollinson.
And I'm Helen Yee Sports.
It's a beautiful day here in Las Vegas. A lot of action going on in the world of sports. But Helen, we just spent our weekend in San Diego.
Yeah, it was a great time. One of best time I competed this past weekend. Besides the fact that I think I broke my middle finger. And they say that swimming is not a contact sport. Well, fun fact, it is.
So you competed in the 50 freestyle for swimming this weekend.
Yes, I competed in the 50 meter freestyle. I felt like doing a time trial on the Friday. I was like, you know what? I'm feeling pretty good. I feel like kind of betting on myself and swimming a day early. Swim that day, win a best time, but broke my finger.
So. It was worth it.
Yeah, it was worth it. But you know what? I think I'm more proud of the fact that the next day, with a broken finger, I swam the 50 freestyle again. But I think, obviously, that day I did not go my best time. I was just too concerned about, like, will the bone come out? Like, I'm kind of nervous what's going to happen. But I think when that adrenaline wore off, I was like, yeah, this is pretty painful. Maybe I should just get this taped and not move it for a while.
So now you understand when some of these athletes play injured and they can go forward and still play and perform well, you can live that.
Yeah, I have so much respect for what they're doing, and especially even freaking Kurt Angle with a broken neck. Seriously, like this broken finger, and I was like in excruciating pain. I was crying. I was like, I don't know if I could even swim. And it's just swimming at the end of the day. It's not like I'm really having any contact with anybody.
You brought up Kurt Angle. For decades, we've had the legend, the icon Sting, perform as a professional wrestler. The amount of injuries he's had to withstand to continue going. The other night, it was his last match ever with AEW. Talk about a childhood legend, Sting, you know, hanging it up. He's an icon.
I know.
How many years strong did that guy keep going forward, battling injuries? You know, I mean, look. Everyone says, oh, wrestling's fake, so on and so forth. Yeah, but being an athlete and dealing with bumps, bruises, jumps, the nicks, the knacks, the travel schedule, I mean, those guys really had to work, really had to perform, and this guy did it for decades.
Yeah, and he was one of the last wrestlers that you've interviewed, right?
That's right. Got to interview him backstage at the United Center in Chicago for AEW. I forgot which pay-per-view it was off the top of my mind, but the highlight was interviewing Sting backstage.
Well, not only that, though, but kind of a behind-the-scenes story. He is so nice and so humble. Like, I was actually kind of surprised at how humble he was.
Certainly. And talk about a guy who just pivoted in his career as well. You know, just going with the punches, turning into Sting, you know, going from that hero, the blonde hair, the colored face paint, to just going to the dark hair, long hair, white and black, the Sting look, holding the baseball bat, a true icon in the world of wrestling, and we'll always remember him.
Yes, and I know you love the Mount Rushmore stuff. Would you put him on your Mount Rushmore of greatest pro wrestlers of all time?
I would have to. He's got to be right up there with the greatest pro wrestlers that have never competed in the WWE. I know he's a Hall of Famer, but he was not a WWE, or I guess at the time even the WWF, wrestler. He's got to be the greatest wrestler to never perform in that organization, but have him right up there, just like you have to have a Hulk Hogan right up there. And then everything gets very, very subjective. Like, are you someone who likes John Cena? Do you like The Rock? Do you like Triple H? We could go on and on. Ric Flair. But I would put Sting in my Mount Rushmore for sure.
Yeah.
But let's talk some NFL because it's an absolute big day in the NFL. Last week, we just had the NFL Combine. We're going to get to some Combine talk and some takeaways there with our guests coming up later on in the show. But let's talk about the big news that's happening in the NFL today. I want to start with this. The Broncos planning on to release Russell Wilson. Not really a big surprise there, but that's a big move in the NFL. Adam Schefter tweeted earlier this morning that the running back free agent class will be headlined by Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs. We've learned that today that the Raiders aren't going to franchise tag him 2 years in a row. So Josh Jacobs on that list, Derrick Henry, Austin Eckler, Tony Pollard, DeAndre Swift, among others. This certainly has to be the best running back free agency class in NFL history. Never a time like this. Never a time like this, Ellen.
Yeah, that's crazy. But you bring up Russell Wilson, and
Russell Wilson is a fantastic quarterback, and he's not the only quarterback that's a veteran that's headlining this free agency class. But I wanted to say, though, when it comes to the running backs, the value of the running back position, it's just not what it used to be. And clearly you see that in the Super Bowl matchup a few weeks ago here in Las Vegas, where you have the best running back in the NFL, Christian McCaffrey, on the 49ers against Isaiah Pacheco, who's one of the better running backs in the NFL, but he was a seventh round draft pick. And now he's a two-time Super Bowl winner, Isaiah Pacheco. It just shows you that teams are willing to take a chance in the NFL draft and free agency for running backs than some of these premier guys in spending, and it just shows you where we are in the NFL. So Russell Wilson, you were saying, Helen.
Yeah, so I guess my question is, which veteran quarterback would you rather have start your team next season? Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins, or Justin Fields?
And that is a great question because there's also rumors circulating right now that Kirk Cousins could be an Atlanta Falcon, which would be very interesting. I know Justin Fields has some ties to the Atlanta Falcons, being a Georgia kid, following some of the key players on Instagram and social media on that Falcons team. And then there's Russell Wilson, too. But look at the teams with all the needs for quarterback right now. I'm just listing off the top of my head. I'm thinking Denver now. They're getting rid of Russell Wilson. They're in the quarterback hunt. Pittsburgh, because they're going to want to move on for Kenny Pickett or at least bring on some competition for Kenny Pickett. The Atlanta Falcons clearly need a quarterback. Our Las Vegas Raiders are in the hunt for a quarterback, especially now with parting ways with Jimmy Garoppolo and that experiment not working out. The Washington Commanders are clearly in the hunt, and that's why they're at a top draft position. Same with the New England Patriots. And then the Minnesota Vikings, especially if they're moving on from Kirk Cousins. So here's the thing with Kirk Cousins. Four-time Pro Bowler, 1-3 in the postseason. He's the owner of the largest comeback in NFL history back in 2022. How could you forget that game when the Colts were leading the Vikings, and then they blew a 33-point lead? I mean, I know that. What was it? The Vikings had 22 unanswered in the fourth quarter, and then they brought the game to overtime where they got the go-ahead game-winning field goal. I think of Kirk Cousins, I think of that performance. And then Justin Fields with no playoffs, no Pro Bowls. And then Russell Wilson, I think it speaks for itself. I mean, I think he's built a Hall of Fame-worthy resume. Yeah. Nine-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl winner. 2015, he led the NFL in passer rating. 2017, he led the NFL with passing touchdowns. Russell Wilson's body of work speaks for itself. I think he's going to have so much to prove. It depends on the fit. Here's the thing with Kirk Cousins. Here's the pushback. He's going to be 36 years old by the time of the NFL regular season starting up, and he's coming off an Achilles injury. Just look at the history of guys and athletes in different sports, especially in their mid-30s, coming back from an Achilles injury.
You know, Jamal Hill, the UFC light heavyweight champion who never lost that title, and he's fighting at UFC 300, just recovered from an Achilles injury. But when I interviewed him last week, he did give a shout out to Kirk Cousins because
Absolutely.
Of that, right?
Absolutely. He joins him. I mean, Aaron Rodgers had the injury, but what I don't like about Kirk Cousins' injury was it was non-contact. When Aaron Rodgers went down, he had a 300-pound lineman bringing him down in the beginning of the season for the Jets, but Kirk Cousins was non-contact. mid-30s. He's been an exceptional quarterback. I know I talked about the 1-3 in the postseason, but he was on a trajectory to really lead this Minnesota Vikings team with weapons for a playoff push, for a playoff run, and then it was derailed with the injury. If I were to go based off of most potential for the long term, I'm going with Justin Fields, even though he doesn't have the playoffs or the Pro Bowls, because he's a dual threat quarterback who, yes, is still learning the position. Yes, would be the most cap-friendly quarterback playing next season, but I think you can really see the upside and potential because you could see the value of a quarterback in today's NFL who could do it with both their legs and their arm. Think of the guys off the top of my mind, the Lamar Jacksons, the Josh Allens, obviously the Patrick Mahomes, guys that can beat you with both their arms and their legs, can extend the play, can do what they can, however they can, to get the job done. Justin Fields has that potential. What's the mobility going to be like for Kirk Cousins next season and moving forward for a guy who wasn't the most, let's be real, mobile quarterback to begin with? And then you have Russell Wilson, who I think if you're a team, and I just named and listed all those teams that need a quarterback, if you're ready to win right now, next season, you of those three guys, of the Kirk Cousins, the Justin Fields, the Russell Wilsons, you want a guy you want to win right now, I go with Russell Wilson because I think he's got so much to prove. I think he's already done it. He's won it, and he's the type of guy. And then Justin Fields, based off of potential, Kirk Cousins would be my odd guy out, Helen. He would.
Interesting take you have there, Dave.
Certainly. Real quick, too, before we get to our first commercial break, I did want to just touch on some NBA stuff right now. The Celtics are rolling 11-game winning streak. Let's talk real quick about the Milwaukee Bucks. 6-game winning streak yesterday. Doc Rivers coaching against the Clippers. They had no Giannis Antetokounmpo. Damian Lillard exploded for 41 points. And the Milwaukee Bucks get the job done. I like the Bucks. Second seed in the Eastern Conference. Where's all the talk now about Doc Rivers?
I know.
Bad coach, good coach, whatever. Milwaukee Bucks are doing their thing.
Are they your favorites to win?
I still like the Celtics. I just wanted to bring that up, though, Helen.
Okay.
They're my second favorite in the East.
Just giving them some props. Right?
And I like the Nuggets right now still. The Lakers are playing hot. We'll get to that. But I still like the Nuggets. I like Jokic. I like Jamal Murray. I love that combination, that center point guard. And I just think that big small is phenomenal, and you got to beat the champs, you got to dethrone the champs, and let's see who can do that this season.
Yes. Well, we're gonna head to our first commercial break. When we come back, though, we have Arash Markazi joining us to talk some NFL combine and Pac-12. Is it the last one here in Vegas next week?
Welcome back. We're your hosts, Dave Schmullinson and Helen Yee. Peel back the curtain in the Vegas sports world and beyond.
Welcome back to the Schmo Zone. I'm Helen Yee Sports.
And I'm Dave Schmullinson.
And I'm so excited to have the founder and CEO of the Sporting Tribune, the one and only Arash Markazi, joining us right now. What's up, Arash?
Not much. How are you guys?
First off, we're good, but happy belated birthday.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I hope you celebrated great.
It was a lot of fun. It was good to see a lot of friends and family. So, yes, thank you.
Good. Well, hey, I know you were really busy. You were just in Indianapolis for the NFL Combine. So I want to know, what were some of your key takeaways from that week?
You know, the big thing for me and why I went there was probably twofold. I mean, we did not get a chance to talk to Caleb Williams since November 11th, I want to say. Like, he didn't talk after the last game against UCLA. So just to kind of see where he was at, again, there was a lot of reports out there in terms of, you know, where he wanted to go or where he did not want to go. And so it was good to catch up with him and talk with him there. He didn't throw, which we knew. But so that was number one. And then two is that the Chargers have a top five pick. It'll be Jim Harbaugh's first draft with the Chargers. So you're getting a chance to kind of chat with him as well. So this was my first combine. So I had never gone there. It definitely kind of lived up to what people said it was in terms of, you know, schmoozing and talking to different coaches and GMs and things like that. But, yeah, the big takeaway was, you know, Caleb Williams definitely wants to be the first pick in the draft. He's totally fine going to the Chicago Bears. I do think that's where he gets drafted. probably the big question at that point is, do they move on from Justin Fields? But, yeah, I mean, my guess is that Chicago keeps the pick and takes Caleb.
Wow, Arash, that is some news there.
Yeah, dropping bombs.
And you spent some time, obviously, covering Caleb with his USC days. And do you feel like he fits the narrative of best prospect at quarterback since Andrew Luck? Is that what you see when you see Caleb Williams, Arash?
You know what? It's a great question, and I'm a little biased because I went to USC and I went to the majority of his games. But I really think what I like about Caleb Williams and why I do think he's the best prospect since Luck is his ability to change depending on the pressure he gets. There's a lot of rookie quarterbacks out there that if you get pressure on them, they crumble, they don't know what to do. His ability to find a way to either run, to find the open receiver, to audible, he's been compared to Patrick Mahomes. Like, I'm not going to do that to him just because Patrick Mahomes right now is the best quarterback in the league and is certainly in the conversation to be one of, if not the greatest of all time, but he's in that conversation because of his ability to adjust, and I've never seen anything like it. The problem was the way he played this past season. They had a lot of struggles. The offensive line was not great, so he didn't have the senior year that he would have liked. But, you know, he's the most talented quarterback that I've seen at USC, and I do think that's saying something for a school that's had, you know, Carson Palmer, Mark Sanchez, Matt Leinart, Sam Darnold, you know, guys like that.
Well, that's very interesting, but as a warm-weather quarterback, hopefully that also translates to Chicago. Let's go back to what you were just saying, though, about Justin Fields. You just celebrated your birthday. It's his birthday today. There was all these rumors about him potentially going to Pittsburgh. What's his value in a trade to Atlanta or to other franchises? Why do you get the sense that the Bears will end up keeping him and drafting Caleb Williams?
Here's the thing, and the big question is, what kind of a trade can they get for Justin Fields? I do think that if they don't get the trade that they want, they may keep him for a year. But listen, at the end of the day, there's no doubt about it, you're only going to keep one quarterback, right? So what can you get for Justin Fields? I mean, I do believe that if Justin Fields were to go to a situation like Pittsburgh with Mike Tomlin and a structure in place that he could really thrive in, he would do well. Now, does that mean you get a second-round pick? Does that mean you get, like, a conditional first if he plays well? Like, my guess is that the Bears will try to trade Fields, but that they won't get a deal that they like. And I do think Justin Fields has shown, like, enough to warrant a second-round pick. So, listen, it doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense to keep those two guys on the roster, but I do think Chicago's going to stay firm that we want at least a second-round pick for Fields.
Yeah.
Well, switching gears to the Raiders, though, Arash, what do you think the Raiders should do with the 13th overall pick?
You know, there's so many positions that they want to address, and I talked to a number of prospects. They were all impressed by Coach Antonio Pierce. The majority of the guys said, like I really like this guy. Like, I like this vibe. A number of the, like, offensive linemen that I talked to said that they were very impressed with Pierce, that they would like to go to Las Vegas. That, to me, is the big thing, because no matter who the quarterback is, you have to protect them. And so I do think they go with an offensive lineman, but, again, wouldn't be surprised if they go with a defensive lineman, pass rusher. Again, there's a lot of holes that they need to fill, but I do think that they went with the right choice in keeping Pierce. I mean, like, every prospect I talk to, and the number one question that they get is, you know, how was your conversation with this coach or that coach? They were all impressed by Pierce.
Could you see a scenario where they get aggressive and they look at the draft and they want to trade up for a quarterback? Maybe Antonio Pierce reunites with a Jaden Daniel from their times together at ASU before the Heisman winner went on to LSU, and obviously Antonio Pierce coming to the NFL. Can you see a scenario where they trade up for one of these top quarterbacks?
It's a great question. I think the problem that they have there is that there's going to be a run of quarterbacks 2 and 3. So what do they have to give up to go and be the second or third pick in the draft? My guess is it's going to be too steep, and I do believe that they can get a good quarterback late in the first round, second round. There will be quality there, but my guess is that the price to move up to the second or third pick will be way too steep.
Let's transition to some NBA. Let's talk about the Lakers. I mean, they've had an up-and-down season. They are pushing for a playoff run here. They're obviously not one of the top four-seeded teams, but they're looking like they could do better than being a play-in team. Where do you think the Lakers are going to turn their season in direction-wise from now through the NBA playoffs, now that we're in the back half of the NBA season?
You know, the close of this season is really beginning to remind me of last year. We're coming off of the break. And by the way, people forget, like, coming off of the, like, All-Star break a year ago, they were the 13th seed, they were below 500, and they had to go on a heck of a run. I mean, they were basically playing playoff games at the end of the season just to the play-in tournament. They make the play-in tournament, they go all the way to the Western Conference Finals. I am struggle because they really brought back a core group that I like. However, I do think that they've turned the corner, and the way they beat the Clippers, came back and found a way to beat the Clippers. They, in my mind, can beat any team in the Western Conference except for one team, and that's the Denver Nuggets, who they listen, and there's no shame there that they're the defending champions. So they have a run in them, I think. Listen, their goal is to be the sixth seed and not be in the play-in tournament. My guess is they have to be in the play-in tournament. But they, depending on who they play, they can go on a run to the conference finals.
Looks like we're losing. It seems like you were going in and out right there in that last word. No problem. No problem. Wanted to transition now to a little bit of college basketball. This may be the last year of the Pac-12 basketball tournament right here in Las Vegas. What are your expectations from the Pac-12 basketball teams that could be making a deep run and potentially a Final Four appearance, if not a national title?
Listen, this is the end of the run for the Pac-12. I'm so sad to see the Pac-12 come to a close like this. And by the way, like, as a USC fan, I was so pumped for, like, Bronny James and Isaiah Collier and all that. They've had a terrible season. I'm just going to be thrilled to be there, but it's sad. Like, the Pac-12 should not be dying like this. And so it was sad to be at the last Pac-12 football game there in Las Vegas. We'll be at the last Pac-12 basketball games in Las Vegas. The expectation is that I think UCLA will have a little bit of a run in them, but it's been such a disappointing season for that conference just across the board when you look at the teams. And again, I'm speaking for someone from Los Angeles, but just a disappointing end to the Pac-12.
It is, but as a University of Arizona alum, I'm a little excited about my Wildcats, but obviously cautiously optimistic. Caleb Love, the transfer from UNC, we know how important point guard play is for a deep run in the NCAA tournament, so I have my hope, but I've been crushed way too many times, especially in the past decade or two, so I don't have high hopes, but I was just hoping, Arash, you would just tell me, yes, whether it's UCLA or it's Arizona, we are going to have a Final Four, better yet, a championship-level team for the last season in the Pac-12, the Conference of Champions, in the NCAA.
Hey, it's U of A, and by the way, that's a home game for U of A. I mean, those folks in Tucson come out for that Pac-12 tournament. So I'm expecting U of A, bear down, it'll be all red there in Las Vegas.
And when do you get to Vegas for the March Madness craziness?
So I will be there for day one of the Pac-12 men's tournament. But by the way, I'm bummed that I'm not there for the Pac-12 women, because Juju Watkins, USC, about half of the Pac-12 teams are ranked. So that Pac-12 women's basketball tournament, folks, if you can head out there, you should, because I'm going to be watching on TV. But I'll be there for day one of the Pac-12 tournament.
Well, we can't wait to see you in person, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I will talk to you guys soon.
Thank you so much, Arash. Arash Markazi, longtime writer, founder and CEO of the Sporting Tribune, covers everything Los Angeles, Las Vegas, and Hawaii sports. He knows his stuff, Helen.
I know, 100%. I always love catching up with him. He's been a great friend over the years. But when we get back from this next commercial break, we have UFC 299 in Miami.
And we got a Hall of Famer joining us, so don't go anywhere. The Schmo Zone, ESPN Radio Las Vegas.
Now you're back into the Schmo Zone on ESPN Las Vegas.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Helen Esports.
And I'm Dave Schmolensen. Our next guest on the Schmo Zone, he is the former featherweight champion of the WEC. He's the UFC Hall of Famer. He's the leader of Team Alpha Male. He is the California kid, Uriah Faber. What's up, Uriah?
What up, what up? How are you guys?
We're good. How are you, and how's Miami?
Oh, man, Miami's beautiful. I've been sitting out here in the yacht club. Just looking at boats, getting inspired, sitting in the sun, making phone calls. And here we are.
One thing to add to the introduction, the entrepreneur. I forgot to say that, too, because you are always doing business. You're always doing big things, Uriah.
I appreciate it. Yeah, working hard, you know it.
For sure. Well, we look forward to seeing you out there in Miami in a few days for UFC 299. Big fight card. And you got two really important fighters on this card in Song Yadong facing Peter Yan in the bantamweight division. And then you have a big pivotal matchup, too, in the women's flyweight division with Macy Barber taking on Caitlin Chookagian. So you definitely have your hands full. Team Alpha Male, well represented.
Yeah, it's going to be an awesome night of fights. And we got a ton of potential in both these matchups. I mean, realistically, you know, a win for Song puts him right there in the hunt for the title, probably up next. Be great if Cheeto upsets O'Malley, get the rematch with Cheeto, then we fight O'Malley after that. So we get those three in a row, get Yan, get Cheeto, get O'Malley for Song, and we'll be sitting pretty.
Well, that would be best case scenario, because I do know that they have Corey Sanhagen in attendance. They got Mirab Dvalishvili planning on being there. But you know how it is. Styles make fights. People argue that Cheeto wasn't the most deserving bantamweight to get this title shot against Sean O'Malley. But you know how the business works. Timing is everything,
yeah.
And matchups are everything. So if the cards fall in the right place, Song, with an impressive performance, could get that opportunity.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I think they've kind of already put that out there, and Macy's not far away either. I mean, another big win for Macy against a tough opponent, and she's right in the talks, too, of title fight. She's been on a big win streak, looking better every day in practice. And, it's an exciting time for us, man. We got Yan Zanyao, who's up in UFC 300 for the title. We could have three titles at little old Tam this year if everything goes perfectly.
Yeah, Yan Xiaonan, that's going to be huge, too, that title fight here in Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's going to be big. And before that, we've got Corey McKenna's making her a return after being out for injury in Vegas on the 16th. And we got Ricardo Ramos fighting in, I think, 26th or something like that. We got a bunch of guys and girls on the docket making power moves.
So let's start with UFC 299, and let's talk about this main event between Sugar Sean O'Malley and Marlon Chito Vera, which is a rematch from a few years ago. Obviously, it didn't end in the best way fights end with Sean O'Malley. He ended up losing by TKO, but he injured his foot, his ankle, and he wasn't really able to continue. He goes on the ground, and Marlon Chito Vera was able to finish him with elbows. But now Sugar Sean O'Malley is the champion. And he has the belt, and Chito Vera is the challenger. What do you think is the mindset for Sugar Sean O'Malley heading into this fight as his first title defense, facing someone who's got the only L on his professional record?
Great athletes, great performers come up with great excuses, and I like excuses. I think excuses are awesome as long as they're fixable ones. And I can guarantee you, I know O'Malley's still says he's undefeated and kind of seems like a joke sometimes, but I think if I were him and I went back and watched that fight, I would tell myself the same thing. Like, that was kind of a fluke. It wasn't, you know, by anything, you know, of course, Cheeto has practiced low kicks and everything else, but the way that thing went down was unusual. And so I don't think O'Malley is going to be worried about the O on his loss. I think he really feels like he's the better fighter. And I think Cheeto, on the other side, believes he's a better fighter, and he won fair and square. You know, he knocked O'Malley out. I mean, he was the one that kicked him in the ankle, which caused that, you know, his foot to go out. So I think both guys believe they should, believe they can. In my opinion, I think O'Malley's got an edge. You know, he's the champ now. He's got some skill sets that are really, really dangerous. And especially for a guy like Cheeto, who sometimes has a late start where he gets caught with big stuff early on and kind of grinds guys out, O'Malley's shown that he's dangerous. I mean, he can put guys out early, you know, good guys out early. So both are dangerous guys, but I'm going to lean towards O'Malley.
And looking at Song Yadong versus Peter Yan, like we were just discussing, it is a very important matchup. So how do you foresee this fight playing out for Song?
I mean, look, Yan's one of the best in the world, you know, world champion for a reason. He's incredibly tough and he's extremely skilled. I feel like he still is getting better, meaning he's adding to his skill set. I don't feel like he's really been developed by like a coaching staff or a team or anything. He just loves to train. He trains hard. He finds ways to get better, but he hasn't been like developed, you know. And when that happens, and you're jumping from gym to gym throughout your career, you're also getting a lot of big fights in the gym. You know, you're not always in a friendly environment where you're working together. It's, you know, hard sparring and so I think we have an advantage on that side. Song has been developed over the last couple of years. The fighter he is now is much different than the year before and the year before that. And we've been smart in making sure that he's not taking too many hits to the head and really rounding out his game between jiu-jitsu and boxing and kickboxing and wrestling and mixing it all together. So a couple of years ago, I would say, you know, Yan would have an advantage. But at this point, I think that we have a pretty big advantage with speed and all-around technique. And I think it could be on the ground or standing where we get the job done. And, of course, Yan's dangerous. I feel like his biggest assets are his boxing and his wrestling. And for Song, I feel like it's boxing, wrestling, and jiu-jitsu, and speed. So those are the two differences, in my opinion.
Switching gears to the co-main event in the lightweight division, former interim lightweight champion Dustin the Diamond Poirier, he's never had back-to-back losses in his UFC career. He's facing Benoit St. Denis, who's just an absolute wrecking ball, an up-and-comer in this lightweight division. An absolute pivotal matchup with title implications, title eliminator implications. Dustin Poirier coming off that loss to Justin Gaethje over in Salt Lake City. What do you think we'll see out of the Diamond Dustin Poirier? Do you think that the veteran will edge out this young up-and-comer Benoit St. Denis?
I don't know too much about the opponent, but I know Poirier's a champ. I mean, he's extremely skilled. There is a lot of passing in the guards as of late. You know, we've seen with Ilya, who won the battle against Volkanovski, and you know, I haven't done my research to know how good this guy is, but Poirier is going to be in there to win. I want to lean towards him just because I know him better. And I kind of believe in what I've seen from him, and I'm kind of in the dark on the other dude. But it has happened many times where, you know, you don't really know somebody, and all of a sudden everybody knows them. That happened with TJ and Cody, and the list goes on. All these guys that went from virtually unknown to, you know, vying for a belt, and this could be that scenario. But I'll lean towards Poirier.
And speaking of Poirier and someone that he's fought multiple times, Conor McGregor. So it looks like on Instagram, Conor made a post saying that, quote, "I wish for the Nate Diaz trilogy fight on Mexican Independence Day in the Sphere and Michael Chandler in June. So Diaz September and I've let this be known. What are your thoughts on kind of what Connor wants, and do you think that he actually does come back this year?
I think he comes back. I mean, look, when you got a bunch of good stuff going for you, you go back to stuff that you like, you know. I mean, he's got some good momentum just in life in general. I think the Diaz fight, that fight would be huge. It's a good, you know, where they're both kind of at in their career, I think that's a good fight to make happen. And I think they both have fun with it. They both got cash. Like the idea of the sphere. The fighters fight, you know what I mean? And he's a young guy that's, you know, full energy, and he isn't getting a fight in a cage soon. He's probably going to get a fight out in the real world, and we don't want to see that. That's the way I look at it. And, yeah, and then Chandler next. I think, why not? Why not do both?
I know we've talked about this at nausea, at length. The Schmo has asked the pro Uriah Faber this so many different times. What's taken so long? Is it the money? Is it the injury? What can possibly keep holding up Conor McGregor and pushing back this return? Because we keep hearing dates, and we keep hearing the goalposts keep moving back here.
You're asking the wrong guy. I have no clue, but, you know, I would say at this point, it sounds like he kind of does what he wants.
Yeah.
You know, when, you know, Dana's talked about this before, when you don't need the payday, it's all about when you feel like doing it, and then it's going to be on your terms, and if it's not on your terms, then you don't do it. So I think that's probably what's going on, you know. It's other things keep coming up, most likely.
And then we have UFC 300 here next month. That card is absolutely stacked. I think people reacted kind of weird when they heard Jamal Hill against Alex Pereira, because maybe they were just expecting like Brock Lesnar to return out of retirement or something crazy to happen. But I think we got to applaud the fact that Jamal Hill, off of an Achilles rupture, 9 months later, is going back to fight for the title he never lost against Alex Pereira, who climbed to gold quicker than anybody when he came to the UFC. So absolutely outstanding matchup. And when you look at that matchup, like, what do you take away from those two going at it at UFC 300?
Oh, man, that's a hard one to say. I think Pereira is really good when he doesn't have to cut a ton of weight. You know, he's, and then Jamal is kind of deceiving, like the way he looks versus I imagine he's super strong and like a fluid type of athlete. It's kind of hard to say who will be the favorite, but I'm excited for that match. I mean, the new era of the fight game, you know, these are the big names. These are the champs that we want to see. So, you know, if somebody's hoping for Brock Lesnar to come out, I mean, you know, Brock Lesnar, he hasn't been fighting for a long time, or, you know, one of the big names that's been a big name for a long time. These are the new big names, so we just got to accept that.
And in the co-main event, though, Yan Xiaonan, she's coming off a very impressive victory over Jessica Andrade. So that fight against Zhang Weili, what are kind of your expectations for her going into that fight?
Oh, man, both those girls are so tough. I feel like, you know, this is Yan's time. She really has, you know, she came to us with a purpose, and that was to get the tools that she needed to be where she believes she belongs, which is the world champion. And the work that I've seen her put in with myself, with Danny Castillo, with, you know, even Alex Sandoval, who's one of our coaches, and Joseph Morales is one of our coaches that are both 125-pound veterans in the UFC. On the grappling side, that's all on the grappling side alone, the four of us. Is amazing. But then she's got her boxing coach Marcus, and she's got, you know, a bunch of kickboxing world champions inside the gym, like Guillerme and Cedric Bonhoeff and Slava Borshev. And the tools are there. I think just an execution of a great day with some great luck, and she's the world champ.
He's Uriah Faber. He's the UFC Hall of Famer. On that note as well, of this matchup, you got two people representing a country in China going at it for this magnitude of event. There's got to be some crazy additional pressure, whether she either female athlete, let it be shown, let it be known or not, that's got to exist because of just the magnitude of the event and what it actually means for them and their country.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. I mean, you've got two Chinese female fighters, really peers. They're about the same age, and they're both pretty soft spoken and really representatives of the country. And to be, I mean, it's exciting for everybody that kind of falls along the trajectory of this sport. I mean, this sport has come so long in such a short period of time, and to have these two powerhouses from the Chinese Republic just basically looking to do a clean sweep on the top two female fighters in the world is exciting. So I don't think the pressure's there for Yan as much as maybe Wei Li, and I don't know that she'd feel it either. When you've been a champion for that long, she's lost it, gained it back. It's different. I think Yan's just excited. I mean, this is a huge opportunity for her. She's been putting in the work. She's, we had to make her sit out the other day because we felt like she was wanting to train more and more and more. And I was like, you know what? The hay's in the barn. Danny and I sat her down and said, hey, take a couple days off. And when she came back from 3 days off, oh my gosh, it was incredible to see the skill set and where she's at right now. It's going to be a great fight, and I think we're getting that belt.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm counting down the days. But, Uriah, we really appreciate your time. We can't wait to see you in Miami, hopefully near a yacht or a boat somehow by the water.
Yeah. I'm right here on all the boats right now.
Okay, that sounds fun.
Trying to see if we can maybe rent one for the next 2 days here.
Not a bad idea.
Gotta get on the water. Yeah, you guys are welcome to join us.
Thank you. You answered it. You extended the invitation. We appreciate
that. Right.
Thank you
so much.
Helen,
we need Helen in her swimsuit outfit for do some training out there. I want to see the Olympic training preparation out in the ocean.
Yeah.
For you, swimming. I'm going to pack my swimsuit just for your eye favor.
There we go.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. And keep up the great work with everything A1 Combat, Team Alpha Male, just everything you've been doing.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
So that was Hall of Famer Uriah Faber. It's always great catching up with him, and I love that he enjoys the water as much as I do.
He certainly does. But also, we talked to him about Conor McGregor too, because he coached against him too. On The Ultimate Fighter. So that's somebody he's gotten to know pretty well over the years as well.
100%.
But it'll be interesting too, because I really hope we do see Conor McGregor return, and he's optimistic he will too. And it's great when he tweets out or messages, not one fight, but two fights. And those are the two fights that would make sense, right? Michael Chandler and Nate Diaz?
100%. But it must feel good, or if you're Michael Chandler, you must be feeling relieved right now, because so many people were wondering, is Michael Chandler waiting on the sidelines a bit too long for a McGregor fight that may or may not happen? Well, it looks like as of today, though, I mean, things can change in an instant, but as of today, it looks like Conor McGregor still wants that fight.
But it's something that Michael Chandler has told us countless times behind camera and in front of camera. He said this to a lot of people. He's not here for a long time. He's here for a good time. And Conor McGregor's definitely pushed that narrative, making it here much longer than he probably anticipated, but it's well worth it. He's been nothing but exciting every single time he's stepped foot inside the octagon, whether he's won or whether he's lost. He's always brought it. It's worthwhile, and I'm glad he's waited, because I hope this happens.
Yes, and we will be there in Miami. We're taking a red eye
Thursday night.
Yeah.
But we're going to check out the Mint 400 here first, which is here in town. They're going to be over at Fremont Street for the parade on Thursday. We're going to go check those out. I mean, I think they have something like over 400 drivers competing.
So
that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and they go pretty fast, right? Or they hit some like fast jumps.
Yeah, they're off road. We just did Nitro Cross last week. That was more.
Didn't you ride in one of those cars?
Got to go in one of those cars. That was a lot of fun. Those things go fast.
Yeah.
Especially around the turns.
So they like, because I'm kind of new to that stuff, so they do turns and loops.
They do turns, more of a dirt track, and they also do jumps. They do
about jumps.
100-foot jumps. Yeah, that's pretty unique.
Wow.
It's different. So it encompasses a lot of different things. It encompasses the off-road and the NASCAR world all in one.
Were you scared?
Of course, but I'm not the one driving, and I'm just, you know, you sign your life away, and you're the passenger to a professional driver, and you do a ride-along. You trust them. We got a little sneak peek, a little taste of it. Got to post it on my socials at the Schmo312 and follow Helen at
Helen Esports.
And follow the Schmo Zone at the Schmo Zone.
But Mint 400, will you be riding along too, or
I'm gonna see what we're doing. I think the actual race is Friday and Saturday, and we gotta catch a flight to Miami. So I'm not sure if we're gonna be able to go in the cars this time, but we'll see what I can get. They're pretty nice to me.
But hey, one thing we do know, we'll be in Miami, and maybe we'll get a swim in with your eye with my broken finger.
With your broken finger, I see what you did there. We appreciate you tuning in. The Schmo Zone every Tuesday at 2 p.m. here on ESPN Radio. We will see you next week.